competition. Emerson, AT&T, Verizon, Cisco, and Intel are all dedicating resources as well. Accenture notes spending could reach $500 billion by 2020, with a larger global economic impact in the trillions of dollars by 2030, creating a new industrial revolution for the internet age. Morgan Brennan, CNBC Radio.
Who might you save?
Your mother, your father, your husband, uncle, aunt, son.
Learn FAST, F-A-S-T, the sudden signs of a stroke. F, face drooping. A, arm weakness. S, speech difficulty. T, time to call 911. You could save.
Your friend, teacher, boss.
So learn F-A-S-T, then pass it on, because you never know who might save you.
Your wife, your colleague.
Spot a stroke FAST. Visit strokeassociation.org, brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, Joe Capitano here, Senior Vice President with Homeowners Financial Group. And I'm a human being, not a machine. Do you get embarrassed easily? I mean, if you were the only one who forgot to bring the gift to the holiday party, would that embarrass you? Well, what if you couldn't afford your dream home, your first home, your last home? What if your loan was denied? Now, that would be embarrassing. Well, I don't want you to be embarrassed. That's why I listen to you, and I use my many years of experience to help you realize your dreams, help you find the loan and the financing you need. See, a machine, a computer, a website doesn't care if you're embarrassed. It takes a human being like me. Call me, Joe Capitano, 480-305-8545, 480-305-8545, or just go to joeloans.com. Banking number 090-6222, MLS number 9826, Equal Housing Lender. That's 480-305-8545 or joeloans.com.
Hi, this is Nick Grovich, owner of American Federal Rare Coin and Bullion. So many investors bought gold and silver over the past 15 years in hopes of precious metals going higher. If you purchased the right types of coins, you saw the value of your coins skyrocket when precious metals took off. However, a huge number of investors were talked into collector coins by their dealer. Most of these coins barely moved, even when gold hit $1,900 an ounce. Now the metals markets have come back to more reasonable prices, and you still may be sitting on the same coins. Look, if your coins didn't perform during the biggest run-up in metals prices in history, it may be time to take another look at what you own. Give us a call at 480-553-5282. That's 480-553-5282. Or visit us at AmericanFederal.com. Let us do a comprehensive review of your portfolio so you aren't stuck holding the bag next time the precious metals move. Call us at 480-553-5282. Or visit us at AmericanFederal.com.
Market Wrap listeners, join host Mo Ansari for his next seminar on Monday, March 2nd in Scottsdale. He'll share his analysis of the economy and the Federal Reserve and discuss how to maintain gains from record highs set in 2014. Plus, he'll make time to answer questions about your favorite stock, mutual fund, or any investment questions you have. The best part, it's free. You can also make an appointment to meet with him one-on-one on Tuesday, March 3rd and get your free portfolio review. Call 800-388-9700. That's 800-388-9700. And join Market Wrap host Mo Ansari on Monday, March 2nd in Scottsdale for the free seminar and Tuesday, March 3rd for a free one-on-one portfolio review. Space is limited, so call now, 800-388-9700. That's 800-388-9700. Or register online at compaq.com. That's C-O-M-P-A-K.com.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. Your low-price journey starts at Discount Tire.
The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Good afternoon, Arizona. It's time for Doctor Talk with Dr. Belinda Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist who specializes in breast imaging and breast-related issues, and Dr. Carrie Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. This show is about your health care, your well-being, and your life. Get the latest information and answers to your questions from nationally recognized physicians and healthcare experts. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. Talk. It's time for Dr. Talk with hosts Dr. Barclay White and Dr. Bordinko.
Welcome to another Saturday edition of Dr. Talk. We, as always, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy weekends to tune in and listen to us for an hour, and we hope that we empower you to take back control of your health care. So today I'm here in the studio with Dr. Belinda Barclay White, and on not joining us because he's calling in from MD Anderson is Dr. Gershenwald with MD Anderson, Houston, Texas, who's going to be talking to us today about the specific treatment options and how to accurately diagnose melanoma. We've had Dr. Gershenwald on the show before, and it's nice to welcome him back and have him bring some more cutting-edge, up-to-date information. So welcome, Dr. Gershenwald.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
I want to tell our listeners a little bit about the stats related to skin cancers. This is an important topic. We keep bringing it back on because it is such a big topic in the U.S., and I don't think we all realize readily how many people are actually affected by skin cancers, the worst one of all those being melanoma, and that's why we keep bringing it back as a topic to educate our listeners. So let's talk, Belinda, a little bit about why we keep bringing up skin cancer.
Well, it is the most common cause of cancer in the world, 75% of all cancer diagnoses. Now, that is skin cancer generally, not melanoma, which is a lot less common. And Dr. Gershenwald is going to tell us how much less common that is. And most cases of skin cancer are very curable. So the basal cell, the squamous cell, are cured by local surgery typically, or a laser treatment, or there is a topical chemotherapeutic agent now that one can put on them, easily treatable. But the diagnosis and then treatment of melanoma is a lot more complicated, and melanoma is a much more serious cancer.
And I know one of the things that's coming out in our profession, too, is people aren't always referring to melanoma as a skin cancer anymore. Some people are saying it follows more of an immunological pattern. And that's leading to some very interesting new treatment options that are on the forefront. And I know MD Anderson has been behind quite a few of those treatments, and Dr. Kirschenwald is in development with those as well. So we're going to get a lot more detail on that in the upcoming segments. So Dr. Gershenwald, welcome again. Thank you for taking the time to join us. And I just want to toot your horn a little bit here. You know, a couple months ago, early January, there was an article in the New York Times that you were responsible for. And I know it's an initiative that you put a lot of time and effort behind, which is the banning of tanning beds.
Well, thanks for the call out. I was quoted, but the reporter for the New York Times saw this as an important public health issue. And I think the exposure was very well received, and hopefully will help many of the readers make informed decisions going forward.
Right, and tanning beds and melanoma, I think, somewhat go hand in hand, so it's an appropriate topic to bring up during our show. Let's help our listeners understand what the differences are, though. As Dr. Barclay White was alluding to, we have different types of skin cancers. We're really focused on melanoma in this show. Can you just quickly give our listeners an overview of how melanoma differs from other types of cancer?
Sure. So melanomas develop from the pigment-producing cells in the skin, and the pigment-producing cells are called melanocytes. And when they give rise to a cancer, we call that melanoma. They represent probably a little less than 5% of all skin cancers, but the majority of deaths. In contrast, the basal cell and squamous cell, which are by far more common, develop from different cells in the surface of the skin, and so have a clearly different biology. And as you already alluded to, often a very different treatment pattern, and also often a different prognosis.
And melanomas don't only occur, I should say the index lesion, the primary lesion, don't always occur on the skin, correct? They can occur in some unusual places. Can you give us some details of that?
Sure. So while the majority develop initially on the skin, some may develop with no trace of melanoma on the skin at all. We call that melanoma of unknown primary. And so in some rare cases, somebody may appreciate a lump under their arm or in their groin, And when that's worked up, it may ultimately be identified as a melanoma when it was never known to be on the surface. It could also arise on other surfaces, particularly mucosal surfaces in the upper airway or even in the anorectal region. And then finally, and that's because there are melanocytes or pigment-producing cells in these parts of the mucosal lining of the upper and upper airway and the lower GI tract. And then finally, there are actually melanocytes behind the eye. And so there's another type, a very rare type of melanoma called uveal melanoma, which arises from the melanocytes or pigment-producing cells in the back of the eye.
So finding a melanoma that has already spread, because that's really what you're describing, and we're going to go into a lot more detail on how that's diagnosed later on, doesn't necessarily mean someone missed a skin lesion.
That's correct. So most melanomas, fortunately, the overwhelming majority of melanomas are identified on the skin and have had no evidence of spread at that initial time of diagnosis. And so most melanomas, when detected and treated early, are very treatable and often curable.
So I have one more question for you, because I still haven't worked out how this could happen. But I've actually diagnosed a melanoma in the breast. Now, it was close to the nipple. It was behind the nipple. But how does that happen? We don't have melanocytes in the breast.
No, so there, it's a good question. Hard to know the specifics of that particular instance, but there has been melanoma described that has developed or first noted in the soft tissue. And so whether a melanoma might have what we call spontaneously regressed, so there's no evidence of it on the surface, or whether it might have developed somehow by some migrating melanocytes that became cancerous, difficult to tell in this specific case, but clearly we do, on occasion, identify melanoma for the first time in the soft tissue, so in the fatty tissue or in lymph nodes, when there's been no prior evidence of melanoma in the past.
So for our listeners, who's at highest risk? Identify that person.
Sure. So people who are at risk for melanoma are patients who had a prior history of melanoma. So interestingly, the skin is a big organ, and if certain of the melanocytes, the pigment-producing cells, became melanoma in one part of the skin, it would make sense that other areas of the same person's skin would be also at risk. And so personal history of skin cancer and melanoma is a risk factor for skin cancer. A family history of melanoma may be associated with increased risk. Those who have lighter natural skin color, those who have had blistering sunburns, and sunburns particularly as a child or adolescent, are at increased risk for melanoma. And those who have used indoor tanning are another example of people who are at higher risk for melanoma.
So how many times do you have to have used a tanning bed to be at increased risk?
Well, some of the data that's evolving now would suggest that even a single instance of using an indoor tanning device can increase your risk of melanoma, particularly if it's as an adolescent. And there's clearly a dose response. So the more intense that you use and frequent indoor tanning devices, the more the risk. But any amount of indoor tanning device would be considered an increased risk.
Okay, so we're going to come back to you after the break. We're talking with Dr. Gershenwald. Please join us after the break.
You're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510, 99.3 FM.
Okay, so... Do you dread having your annual screening mammogram? For a totally different experience, give Arizona BreastNet a call. Our all-female staff provides you with years of expertise and immediate results in a clean, state-of-the-art, spa-like facility that respects your mind, your body, and your time. If, on the other hand, you have a new breast lump or breast-related finding, call Arizona BreastNet today for an immediate appointment and consultation with a doctor who will give you your results at the time of your visit. At Arizona BreastNet, you will never have to wonder, worry, or wait. Get your results today and call 480-314-7600. That's 480-314-7600 for an immediate appointment, or you can visit us online at breastnet.net for more information.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to Dr. Talk. We're here, Dr. Bordinko and I are here in the studio, and we're talking to Dr. Gershenwald from MD Anderson, and we're talking specifically about melanoma. Before going into the break, we were talking about who of us are more susceptible or at higher risk for melanoma. And the list that you gave was pretty long, actually. But you were beginning to talk about having multiple moles. Can you?
Sure. So people who have what are called dysplastic nevi or irregular moles, if there are multiple moles that don't appear round, just perfectly symmetrical and things like that, that could also be an increased risk. So for someone who has multiple moles, if they don't already see their healthcare provider on a regular basis for a screening skin exam, it would be a good idea to do so.
Okay. And I always tell people, Dr. Gershenwald, see the same provider if you can, because there's an inconsistency when you're switching between providers. So stick with the same dermatologist, or if your primary care is doing that full body skin exam, you know, they tend to chart the same way year after year, and so they can really tell if something is new or changing.
So I think that's a reasonable approach. I do think it's important to be sure that whichever healthcare provider you use, that they're actually interested in examining you thoroughly and really checking you out. You don't want this to be a casual interaction where the patient is required to point out what might be of concern, but really get a good exam when you do go in.
So including checking, you know, even in the hair, sort of behind the ears, actually around the vulva,
bottom of the feet.
Fingernails, bottoms of the feet, areas.
Right. Bottoms of the feet, between your toes, sure.
Okay.
So we talked a lot about what puts you at risk for melanoma and, you know, how uncommon of a cancer this is, but unfortunately it's associated with the higher mortality rate when we talk about skin cancer. So that's why it's such an important topic to bring out to our listeners. Let's talk a little bit more about the actual diagnosis of melanoma and how we make that. Because as you and I were talking off air, it's not about just recognizing an abnormal mole and pointing to it and saying, you know, this is melanoma, but there's a process that has to occur. So can you just quickly walk our listeners through what that process looks like once something is identified that could be potentially a melanoma?
Sure. So someone who has a suspicious mole on their skin, the next step is to see their family practice doc or a dermatologist, and usually have what's recommended to be a biopsy. So a biopsy is a removal of a portion of the skin and underlying fatty tissue that is sent to pathology, and that process is called a biopsy. And then the biopsy is examined under the microscope, and that's really how a diagnosis of melanoma is made. When the pathologist who examines that tissue under the microscope sees melanoma cancer cells.
So we're talking about now the pathology part. So we've removed the melanoma, we've taken it off the skin, and we've done some sort of a procedure that's usually done by a dermatologist, rarely done by a primary care doc, or maybe even a surgeon in some communities, because not everybody has all the same resources. And then that's sent off to a doctor who's called a pathologist, who's actually going to look at the cells and determine if these are of a melanoma nature. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. Correct. Exactly. And so when the pathologist who examines the tissue under the microscope makes the diagnosis of melanoma, there'll be some other important features and characteristics of what he or she sees under the microscope that help describe the potential risk and help to guide in treatment planning. And the most important of these is called the tumor thickness. Essentially, how far does the melanoma invade into the skin from the surface?
So are we talking here about staging melanoma as we stage other cancers in the body?
Absolutely. So melanoma staging. So staging is the way we communicate about cancer. So patients and their physicians, physicians and other physicians, et cetera. And so in melanoma, the stage of the cancer is usually defined as stage 1 to 4, where stages 1 and 2 are where the melanoma is localized to the skin. Stage 3 is where it has spread to the regional area, most commonly the regional lymph nodes. And stage 4, the most concerning, is when melanoma has spread to distant sites on the body.
This is a really important topic for our listeners, so I just want to kind of go over it one more time, because staging is something that really determines the prognosis and the treatment options that we're going to cover here in a few more minutes. So 1 and 2 staging, as we kind of regroup, is probably going to be resolved with just a surgery and no further treatment. And if you go past that stage 2, then you're looking at having to bring in other specialists, such as a medical oncologist or additional surgeons, to do care outside of that local area. Does that sound correct?
Overall, that's generally correct. We do, for some patients who have stage 1 and 2 disease by their initial diagnosis, we do recommend, as part of the treatment plan, some evaluation for possible lymph node spread. But generally, surgery would be the only aspect of treatment for stage 1 and 2 disease, unless there are people who are eligible for certain clinical trials.
Are there specialized surgeons that our listeners should be reaching out to if they've been given that preliminary diagnosis of melanoma by their dermatologist or through their pathology? Should they be looking for a melanoma surgery specialist? I know that happens. It's kind of a loaded question, because that's actually your background at MD Anderson. So is there a reason why they want to go to someone who specifically works with melanoma, or is any surgeon capable of taking care of this lesion?
Great question. So, you know, when we consider how to treat melanoma, we're often thinking about it in terms of what's called a multidisciplinary setting. So, having the resources around that allow a surgeon, a surgical oncologist, so a specialized surgeon who has had additional training in cancer surgery, medical oncology teams, and others. And so, for early stage disease, a surgeon is often the only practitioner who's involved in the treatment itself after diagnosis, but others may also be relevant. There are many general surgeons who will practice melanoma surgery as well, and of course there's variable training in advanced aspects of melanoma care.
And sometimes you were talking, the initial surgery includes sampling lymph nodes, so I believe sampling the so-called sentinel node, which we do in breast cancer, but that was pioneered in the diagnosis and treatment of melanoma, isn't that correct, many years ago?
Right. So a real easy way to think about how will my melanoma likely be managed is to think of two parts of the equation. One is where the melanoma was actually diagnosed on the skin, how will that be treated? And we call that a wide excision, essentially removing some normal appearing skin and then the underlying fatty tissue in that general area. That's called a wide excision. And then, based on the pathology report, your surgeon may also recommend what's called a sentinel node biopsy procedure, also called lymphatic mapping and sentinel node biopsy. And there we take advantage of the ability to map out where the melanoma cells may most likely travel to, away from where it was initially diagnosed on the skin, into the lymph nodes that actually receive drainage from that area of the skin. And that could be very, very helpful to learn if there's any microscopic spread of deposits of melanoma into the what we call the regional lymph nodes.
So you would go back and inject a vital blue dye into the area that was surgically excised, and it would track from there to the sentinel lymph node.
Exactly.
So we're going into another break now. You're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio, 1510 and 99.3 FM, and we're talking about melanoma with Dr. Gershon Wald.
and we will be right back after the break.
Of the hour, we pause for a look at the world's news. Then we're back with Money Talk. We're Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
President Obama has approved a measure that will fund the Homeland Security Department for another week. Correspondent Aaron McPike has details.
The Senate yesterday passed this clean bill that would fund the Department of Homeland Security for the entire fiscal year, and that passed the Senate overwhelmingly yesterday with Republican and Democratic support. And that bill is clean because it does not strip back President Obama's executive actions on immigration reform.
Moscow police say they're looking for those responsible for the murder of Russian opposition leader Boris Nemtsov. Correspondent Frederick Plachin.
He was supposed to attend a rally tomorrow. The main feature of that rally was going to be Russia's policies in Ukraine. Another thing that he apparently also said was that he had some new information on what exactly was going on in Ukraine. We have all this from opposition sources.
GasBuddy.com says prices at the pump have jumped 12 cents over the past week. I'm Molly Page.
Data knows you love posting selfies. Others might see a reflective surface, but you see an opportunity. Like right now. You just caught a glimpse of yourself and you like what you see, and you're thinking, everyone else would probably like it too. Go ahead, you've got more data and you're paying less with Boost Mobile. For only $35 a month, you can take your selfie game to the next level. Parked car window. Click. Selfie. Person wearing sunglasses. Click. Selfie. Anything shiny? Don't mind if you do. You, my friend, have no selfie control. And data's okay with that. Come to data.
Now get unlimited talk, text, and 2.5 gigabytes of high-speed data for $35 a month after you sign up on Auto Reboost, only from Boost Mobile. Enrollment in Auto Reboost required at activation. Removal of Auto Reboost increases plan cost to $45 a month. Video streaming limited to 3G speeds. After applicable data allotment reached, data speeds reduced to 2G speeds for remainder of plan cycle. State and local sales taxes may apply. Restrictions apply.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. We carry the best selection of tires and wheels at everyday low prices.
Your health care. Your well-being and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Welcome back to Dr. Talk. We've been talking here in the studio with Dr. Gershenwald, who is Professor, Department of Surgical Oncology and Division of Surgery at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. And he's helping us understand and explain to our listeners today the diagnosis of melanoma, what are the treatment options, and what can you expect from your care? And what are the great questions to ask your team involved in your care as well, so that you can be empowered to look for the best options? So Dr. Barclay White and myself were just talking with Dr. Gershenwald about the actual excision or removal, we use the word excision in the medical world, of the tumor site. And Dr. Barclay White was asking about what's called the sentinel node. And I know that's a term that us doctors throw around, but Dr. Gershenwald, can you break that down to a simpler term for our listeners to understand why that's a very important step in the diagnosis of their cancer?
Sure. So one of the most common first routes of spread of melanoma, if it escapes from the location in the skin where it initially started, is through the lymph system. And so the lymph nodes that receive lymph drainage, which is part of the circulatory system in the body, are called the sentinel lymph nodes if they receive the lymph drainage from the area of the skin where the melanoma was diagnosed. And we have some amazing tools now to help actually map that out in an individual.
Which is?
Which is using a blue dye, okay, as well as a radioactive tracer. And we call that sentinel node biopsy.
Yes, very similar to what we do for breast cancer mapping, actually.
Exactly.
So we've made the diagnosis. We know whether or not the cancer or the melanoma is in the sentinel lymph node, which is the sort of first draining node, right? If it is in the sentinel node, what is the next step?
So if the melanoma is in the sentinel node, we would often discuss further surgical therapy where we would remove the compartment of lymph nodes in the area where that sentinel node was identified and noted to contain melanoma. If there's no evidence of spread in the lymph nodes, then we wouldn't recommend any additional treatment.
So for a person who's listening to this show and they're trying to understand their diagnosis, if you identify those lymph nodes where it has spread, surgery is still potentially the only thing they will need to treat their melanoma. We don't have to get into other issues like chemotherapy or immunologic therapy to treat this.
Well, when melanoma has spread to the lymph nodes, that's really one of the first general expansions of our treatment plan. So for people whose melanoma has spread to the lymph nodes, we'd call that a positive sentinel lymph node. We would often offer treatment after surgery is complete. And we call treatment when surgery is complete and there's no obvious tumor that remains, we call that adjuvant therapy.
So this is a great segue into the treatment section that we want to talk to our listeners about. And this is a really big topic, so we're going to try and cram a lot of information into a short amount of time. But let's start to break down for the listeners early treatments, and then we'll get into more advanced options for distant spread melanoma. So what's one of the first things that you would see in that adjuvant treatment or that additional management on top of surgery for our listeners?
Right. So for adjuvant treatment, The options right now are a drug called interferon, which is a biological agent that helps to boost the immune system. That's actually a year-long therapy and has been associated with a significant potential for side effects or a clinical trial. So trying out other agents that might also be available to reduce the risk of recurrence. When we talk about adjuvant therapy, what we're trying to do is reduce the risk of recurrence of the melanoma coming back somewhere else.
So it sounds like a really good idea to boost our immunity to help fight the melanoma, but what are the side effects? I mean, they are legion, right? Because very few people end up on interferon presently.
So it's an agent that was approved back in the mid-late 90s, for many people, it makes them feel like they have flu-like symptoms. And so for some, side effects are not so bad. For others, they could be debilitating so that someone's normal routine activity can't easily be performed. And so people may need to either reduce their dose with their doctor's guidance or go off the therapy. Another challenge is that there have been several what are called clinical trials, so investigations to determine how effective this therapy is. And while most of these trials have shown that it reduces the risk of recurrence of melanoma down the road, not all of them have shown what's called a survival benefit or a definite impact on how long someone will live. And so that's another part of the challenge of interferon.
One of the things I didn't like, Dr. Gershenwald, about your response was we asked you what are the treatments and you listed one drug. But that makes me nervous as a clinician. I think it probably will make our listeners nervous
yes.
as well, which says one of the reasons why we're trying to bring so much conversation around the topic of melanoma. First off, if you do things right, it's one of those avoidable situations to put yourself in. But it is actually a pretty deadly cancer once you get it. And unfortunately, if it's caught late and it has spread, what I'm hearing you say is we've got some things cooking in as far as investigational trials, but we don't have a lot of really sound treatment options that have been proven to, like you said, add to survivability.
Well, so let me clarify a little bit. So when drugs are developed, they're often first explored in clinical trials on patients who have advanced disease. So in melanoma, it's generally people whose tumors are no longer amenable to surgery. They've spread to multiple sites and or to distant organs. So let's say the liver or the lung, et cetera. And for those types of advanced disease situations, which are unfortunately numerous in people with late-stage disease. There are actually multiple treatment options now, because there have been seven drugs or drug combinations that have really built on our understanding of how melanoma spreads and how the body handles melanoma just in the last 3.5 years alone. It's not until after those drugs, if they're determined to be worthwhile in the advanced setting, that they then get explored in what we were just talking about, called the adjuvant setting, for people who have some evidence of spread, but there's nothing that could be identified in that adjuvant setting.
So these trials, how long have the trials been going on for?
So over the last 5 to 10 years, there have been multiple exciting trials that have led to the FDA's approval of now these seven drugs and drug combinations. So it's a really exciting time in melanoma. While the overall survival for patients with advanced stage melanoma has historically been very, very low, there have been dramatic developments, including the approval of multiple drugs that really tackle two things. One, ways to boost the immune system, and another class called targeted drugs that try to help take advantage of what we've learned about what goes on inside of a tumor cell and how we could change the switches to really coax the tumor cells to die rather than to spread and proliferate.
So how close are we? I mean, are those drugs available to, you know, me in Phoenix, or are they still available only on trial?
So the good news is that that these drugs that I'm now referencing, in just the last few years, with the most recent drug approval just before the holidays, are now available in the community setting with appropriate physicians outside of a clinical trial. We're always striving to do better, but there are new immunotherapies, for example, that help to what we call release the brakes on the immune system. And there are two different types of these agents that have been approved over the last 3 years and have begun to revolutionize our approach to how we consider cancer amenable to what we call immunotherapy, or trying to harness the immune system of an individual with cancer to fight the cancer.
So this would be another time that I would encourage the listeners to, get on the internet. There's a lot of information out there, good and bad. Unfortunately, we don't really like to direct people there too much. But you can go to www.melanomafoundation.org, and that may help list providers in your area that may be able to offer these specialized medications that Dr. Gershenwald is referencing. If you don't have an academic center of excellence nearby in your hometown, there may be physicians close by, maybe in a neighboring town or so, or nearest big city, that will have access to this drug. And it sounds like that is more of the cutting edge, that people are going to want that treatment option compared to interferon.
And so the interferon is generally for regional disease or stage 3 disease. It's these other agents now that have been working their way in advanced disease settings and are now being explored in the same setting that interferon has been traditionally offered in what we call the adjuvant setting.
And do these drugs have names yet?
So there are two of these drugs that have been approved. One is called ipilimumab. It's a real long name, but it's the first of these immunotherapies.
Let me stop you there, and we have to go into a break, but I would like you to sort of give some more details about those unpronounceable names after
sure.
the break. I'm not going to try and pronounce them.
And just for our listeners, we will post some of this information also on our Facebook page. And remember to like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Dr. Talk, #Dr. Talk. Post your comments, your questions. We would love to hear more from our listeners, and we'll be right back after the break.
you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Join board-certified and personal physician Dr. Carrie Bordinko every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. on Money Radio 1510 a.m. and 99.3 FM for Doctor Talk, where we put healthcare back in your hands. Each week, we'll have a full panel of nationally known medical experts as guest speakers, taking an in-depth look at the issues that affect us all and matter most. Tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. for Doctor Talk.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Doctor Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Doctor Talk. And use the hashtag Doctor Talk. That's facebook.com/Doctor Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back. We are here with Dr. Gershon Ward from MD Anderson discussing melanoma. And before we went into the break, I somewhat rudely cut you off. We were beginning to talk about treatment options for advanced melanoma. And you were talking about immunotherapy and targeted therapies. Could you enlarge on those topics for us a little bit more?
Sure. So just to recap, for immunotherapy is trying to harness one's immune system to fight the cancer. And so what's been learned in melanoma is that blocking a certain part of the immune system that actually acts as the brakes on the immune system, we can effectively release the brakes and allow one's immune system to try to harness its energy to fight the melanoma. And there have been two different classes of immunotherapy drugs that have been approved in the last few years for people who have advanced melanoma. The other major advance in treatment options for people with advanced melanoma is called targeted therapy. I think many of you might need to think back to biology in high school or beyond, but targeted therapy is just what it sounds like. You're trying to pinpoint an abnormality inside the melanoma tumor cells that really help them grow. And what scientists have learned is that there's a particular abnormality inside of almost half of tumor cells, almost half of patients that have melanoma, called the BRAF gene. And when that's abnormal, it's called a mutation. And what these new therapies can actually do is take advantage of that abnormally turned on switch inside of the melanoma tumor cells that may be throughout the body, and literally, by taking a pill or pills, try to turn that switch off and help to kill and eradicate the tumor cells.
So that's very exciting.
And this is a great question then for our listeners to see if they can get that information when they go back and talk to their melanoma team, which could be the surgeon, it could be dermatologist, and their primary care physician. They can ask that question, is there a chance, have I been tested for this BRAS gene? Because it may open up new doors, new opportunities for my treatment.
Absolutely. And a medical oncologist would be another very important part of that equation.
And is that testing very readily available across the U.S. right now to test for that abnormality?
Yeah. So the good news is it could be done with a very, very small biopsy of tissue, often the same biopsy tissue that your physician may have used to diagnose that the melanoma had spread in the first place. So it often doesn't require an additional biopsy. Sometimes it does, but often doesn't. And it could be sent away to be examined for this mutation.
So once someone has undergone the treatment for melanoma, be it either the surgical excision we talked about earlier in the show, or maybe they've had to go on to get some of these pills or injectable medications, and we didn't even go into much about the imaging, which the only role for that is to further diagnose and work up the spread of the cancer. Can you tell our listeners what is really important as a takeaway? How often do they need to be followed after a diagnosis of melanoma? Does it vary by stage, and by who should they be followed?
Great questions, and not one answer. So I'll try to give an overview of this. So for patients who have had a diagnosis of early stage melanoma, so those would be patients generally who had surgery as their only initial treatment and either didn't require lymph nodes to be evaluated or had negative sentinel lymph nodes, as we discussed earlier. Periodic examinations may include every 6 months exam for patients with what we call very thin tumors for the first couple of years, and then maybe annually thereafter.
And these are visual inspections of the skin.
The area of the prior surgery, a complete skin survey, and also what we call a lymph node survey. So assessing for any changes in the lymph node basins on the body, and also whether there's any evidence of changes elsewhere on the skin.
And that lymph node survey is done by palpation by an experienced practitioner, be it a medical oncologist or a primary care physician. It's not done by imaging, correct?
It can be done. It can be complemented by imaging, but generally our approach for patients who have low-risk disease would be that there's no typical imaging that we'd be performing for patients with very early-stage disease. The skin exam and self-exam would also be part of that equation, too, at home.
Okay. And then for stage 3 melanoma, what sort of follow-up would those patients be advised to follow?
So for patients with stage 3 disease where surgery is a mainstay, and we discussed earlier the concept of adjuvant therapy or additional treatment to try to reduce the chance of it coming back, that's when various types of imaging by, for example, a PET CT scan or by CT scan may be integrated into the follow-up schedule. We don't really have terrific national guidelines on how often to image. So that's something that becomes an important dialogue with your melanoma providers who can help guide you through that important discussion. But as a general rule, the follow-ups would be more frequent. So let's say every 3 months for patients who have had evidence of lymph node metastasis. And then over the course of the first couple of years, maybe go to every 4 months. And then by 3 years out, roughly every 6 months, and then by 5 years from treatment with no evidence of any new disease, often then an annual exam would be recommended.
And just to help clarify for our listeners, you referenced a PET CT or PET scan, as a lot of people use that terminology. And for someone who's not familiar with that or they've not experienced that, that is a basic CT scan or CAT scan, but they inject a certain type of uptake, it's called FDG or glucose, that the cancer likes, and that it has a higher uptake in the regions where cancer may have spread. So I just want them to understand it's a test that's available in any community. And like you said, there are no clear guidelines as to the frequency. So some doctors may recommend one at 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. And that's where it really comes into play to have a good relationship with that medical oncologist that you referenced earlier as well, so that they can stay on top of that and stay on top of the recommendations nationally to help you out.
Great.
So I think we should get to some of our myths versus facts at this stage. No talk about melanoma or skin cancer can be complete without talking about sunscreens. So can you tell us about, well, the myth is that there's no difference between a status SPF 30 and an SPF 100 sunscreen. What is the fact?
So the fact is that there's some additional benefit as one increases the SPF factor. It's usually recommended to use an SPF of at least 15 to 30. But what's not clear is when you get to an SPF of above 50, whether any higher SPF factor on the sunscreen is really protecting you any bit more. So I think it's important to respect the sun, don't use the sunscreen as a crutch, but use it as a part of a total package of trying to reduce exposure to the UV radiation from the sun whenever possible.
Another great myth that a lot of people, you'll hear this commonly passed around, is if a spot that has been on your body for years changes but hasn't gotten bigger, it can't be melanoma. What's the truth on that?
So it is possible for some lesions where there's been a long-standing, what we call mole, have melanoma develop within it. Some melanomas arise in areas where there wasn't an obvious mole in the past, but some melanomas arise in a mole that undergoes some change. And so it's a good idea for people who have moles and freckles to have at least an annual screening by someone who is an experienced provider in that regard. And so a dermatologist would be a good recommendation in that regard.
I cannot let you leave this show, Dr. Gershenwald, without asking this question because it's gotten a lot of layman press. I think it was even in the New York Times, like your article was as well. But there was circulating around more so about 2 years ago, there was a myth that was out there that said some ingredients in sunscreen actually cause cancer, and it created a real havoc in the communities as far as people stopped wearing sunscreen. Can you give us the truth on that?
So I'm not a bona fide sunscreen expert per se. I'm not aware of any data that would support that buying sunscreens off the shelf at the supermarket or the drugstore are at a particular risk because they can cause cancer.
So basically, you know, I think that there's a very well known website that actually encourages people to go out in the midday sun and do tanning beds because it increases your vitamin D, and vitamin D is very important for protecting you against skin cancers. What would you have to say to that person?
So clearly there we do know that ultraviolet is associated with vitamin D production, but getting vitamin D from the sun is not the best source if you have a vitamin D deficiency. It's easy to test for, and it's easy to supplement vitamin D, and you could talk to your healthcare providers about that as well. What we do know is that UV exposure from the sun and UV exposure from indoor tanning devices are both known to be carcinogens or capable of causing cancer. And so any way that we can moderate and try to mitigate and lessen the risk is a way that we could help take better care of ourselves.
Absolutely. And on that note, we really want to thank you, Dr. Gershenwald, for taking time again to join us in, on the air today, talking about the important facts, diagnosis, and treatment options surrounding melanoma from the MD Anderson Cancer Center down in Houston. You've been very educational for our listeners, and I just want to say thank you once again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you're listening to Dr. Belinda Barclay-White and myself, Dr. Bordenko, on Dr. Talk. We're here every Saturday. We hope you will like us on Facebook. Remember to look at our Facebook and blog page, ask questions. If they pop into your head, we'd love to air those. And we'll be back next week for another exciting show that empowers you to take back your health care. Once again, thanks for joining Dr. Talk.
You've been listening to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordenko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. If you missed any part of this show, please go to moneyradio.com and listen to the audio archive. For additional information or to have your questions answered live on the air, send an email to drtalkaz@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in to Dr. Talk this and every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor. What news is affecting the markets here and abroad?
Find out by staying with us 24 hours a day. Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids.
Money is what we talk about. We're Money Radio 1510, KFNN Mesa Phoenix, and 99.3 FM KFNN.